It is not old school. It is not old fashioned. It's what is necessary in life for societies in life. And America, especially at this time now, needs this kind of cohesiveness. It needs this kind of community of caring about each other. And that's what happens when you do repertory theater. You create community.
Hello and welcome to The State of Shakespeare. I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And I'm Jim Elliott.
And today we're joined by Ellen Geer, Melora Marshall, Willow Geer, and Ian Flanders from the Theatricum Botanicum, Will Geer's Theatricum Botanicum in Topanga, California. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Welcome. It's wonderful to have you on the line.
Great to be here.
Now, I need to preface this by saying to our listeners that I'm not an impartial interviewer at all today. We're speaking with some of my favorite human beings on the planet, and I am just delighted that they could join us today.
Yay.
Thank you.
We love you, Garrett.
Kiss, kiss.
One of the things I really am enjoying so far about this is that the Theatricum Botanicum is such a family-oriented theater company, and we're talking to practically the entire family.
That's right. We keep going.
So let's start out with a question for Ellen. The Theatricum has a very fascinating origin story. Can you tell us a little bit about how the theater was born?
Many, many years ago. Do you want to go back to the 50s?
Let's go all the way back.
Let's go all the way back to the 50s. That was, you know, during the HUAC, the hearings.
Lots of un-American activities.
Yes, and my father was taken to court. And during that time, he lost everything after being, you know, a supporting actor in films.
Your father was Will Geer.
Yes, Will Geer. And he worked with, you know, Jimmy Stewart and Burl Ives and all these people. And then he was shot down by the hearings, and my mother found this place out here in the canyon. It was called Geer Gardens then. That's how he made his living for his family then. He had a degree in horticulture from Chicago University. And so that all went on for a while, and then he finally went back to work.
15 years, wasn't it?
It was the longest damn time. And then Otto Preminger came along and asked him to be a senator in advising consent, so he went back to work. Then he got the part of Grandpa Walton, so it's very strange going from the baddest guy in town to the most apple pie loved person in town. And during this time, the family all grew up. We hustled like crazy. Most of us couldn't type, so we became actors. and we all gathered back again here to start the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum.
And this was in 1973.
1973, we came back, and it was a healing. It became a healing place for us all to be together, to live a semi-normal life. I mean, theatrical families don't have absolutely normal lives. And we gathered people around, and we got an Academy of the Classics going that's now run by wonderful people. And here we are. We're surviving. How many years? We're having our 40th anniversary.
What year did we become Union and Equity House?
That was in 1979 with the school days is what we did. And that would bring in, it started with only 189 kids. And now we have about 9,000, 7,000 kids a year who come in the spring and in the fall. Then in 1983, we got our first equity contract because our belief always is that an actor must be paid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where we are today, Garrett. We have 4 to 5 plays every year, and we have a wonderful season this year. Can you tell us about it, Willow?
We do 5 plays in rep, actually, which is kind of old school. You can come in one weekend and see all 5 plays. We just opened 2 weeks ago with Midsummer Night's Dream and Taming of the Shrew. And next weekend we open The Royal Family, which is really fun for us because we've got a bunch of the family members in it. And it's very close to home, a lot of it is.
It's a love song.
It is.
It's a love song to theater, this play by Edna Ferber and Kaufman.
It's set in 1927, New York City, a theatrical family. It's a very sumptuous production.
And our last play is in 3 weeks. Mom has put together The Myth and Legends of Merlin. So we're going to be doing that. It's a world premiere play with music by Melora's 2 sons, Marshall McDaniel and Kellen McDaniel.
They've been at Juilliard in Germany getting really, really fantastic, classically orientated.
And then our final play we're doing in our smaller space, we got the rights to one of Joyce Carol Oates' one acts. and Alan Blumenfeld and his wife are going to do it. It's an amazing story about a married couple who deal with whether or not their son has murdered someone. And we're doing that along with a bunch of her long, long monologues.
So it's a very eclectic season. The Theatricum consists of a beautiful Shakespeare garden, two outdoor stages, a 299-seat outdoor amphitheater, and a 99-seat pavilion. And the grounds have recently been expanded, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, we furnish the grounds with beautiful areas for picnicking. People come. It's a very romantic atmosphere. Children love it. We have a young people's concerts every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock for little kids. And then later in the day, our productions take place. But there is something for everyone at Theatricum Botanicum.
It's open house for all sorts of minds to relax and at the same time be stimulated. We're very, very pleased to open our doors this way.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite places in the world. I first experienced a show at the Theatricum in 1997.
Oh.
And of course I saw Midsummer Night's Dream. And I had been living in West Los Angeles. I just moved to Los Angeles from Indiana. And when we pulled off the Pacific Coast Highway up into Topanga Canyon Boulevard, and I fell in love immediately, and I never had imagined that such a place existed or could exist. It's just a breathtakingly beautiful space. And then you get to enjoy the show.
Yes. Well, you played the clown when you were out here from Winter's Tale. You were the clown. You were brilliant.
I can't believe it. I can't believe Garrett is a clown.
He was so good.
I say what, Garrett, after you left, I gave up the theater too. There was no point in going on. Your wall, Garrett, was untouchable. No one's even come close. So I threw in the towel. I gave up.
Well, we'd all been encouraging you to do that for a long time. I'm glad that finally it sunk in.
You're the catalyst, sir.
I'm honored.
And certainly, I've never been, but I will say that the pictures I see of Midsummer are so fantastical. The costumes are great, and they're very, you know, weaved into the nature and the scenery behind you. And I just think it looks like a fantastic experience.
Yes, it is. And I hope that audiences will take advantage of it.
So the theater itself is a true cultural treasure and a gift that the Gear family and many others have nurtured and defended and maintained on behalf of the community and at sometimes great personal sacrifice. And I'm wondering, after 4 decades, do you feel that the work has gotten any easier?
Well, that's a very good question.
That's a big question.
Yeah, I don't feel that it's easier, Ellen. I think it's more challenging
I think
every
it's,
day.
Well, as you grow.
More exciting.
Yeah, it's more exciting. Yeah. The passion, you know, to be in the theater, you've got to have a real deep passion. Otherwise, get the heck out of it.
Right.
It takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of spirit. And your mind has to be twisted, especially if you're helping to run a theater. You know, the administration is enough to kill an artist's mind, you know. And then you try and do all the creative things that you have within you, but you can't, because where the hell are you going to get the money? Mm-hmm. You know, there's always that big turkey.
One of the things about Theatricum is it gives so much opportunity. We have places where people can develop whatever it is they're interested in.
Yeah.
If they want to be actors, if they want to direct, if they want to be playwrights, we have a seedlings program mm-hmm. for playwrights to produce their material, to hear it read by professional actors. Mm-hmm. We have all of these different camps and classes where people come through. And ultimately, they're taught to perform in our huge space in an outdoor theater. And many of them become members of our company because they're so strengthened by the process of learning here.
Melora, maybe you could tell us, in addition to the summer repertory season, you mentioned this, the Theatricum hosts the Academy of the Classics. What is the Academy of the Classics?
Well, we have a myriad of classes that start for children age 4 all the way through adult. We have a teen camp that is exclusively for their age group, but it's patterned after our adult program so that they have the same rich experience that the adult intensive Shakespeare provides.
But are these evening classes that are open to anyone? Or
they're open to anyone. There is an enrollment, and then they run for a period of time, and they learn all the techniques of Shakespeare from speaking to doing the scenes and monologues, fencing, singing,
rhetoric,
dancing,
training, rhetoric, scansion, yeah. All that stuff.
It's very empowering for teenagers. We also have a youth drama camp that runs ages 8 through 14 that's much more of a sort of a classic camp experience where they do a lot of improvisation and they do Shakespeare plays and they have a great time.
Yeah, they're human. Yeah. They're human spirit. That's what's important. Developing them as human beings that want to give to society. And we even have the intensive Shakespeare seminar.
Yeah.
For me to be a Scansion dork and to hear an 8-year-old getting excited about iambic pentameter is probably like the height of my summer existence.
I'd love to hear you say that you're a Scansion dork. You're speaking to two of them.
Now you're talking our language.
Yeah, exactly. That's as good a segue as any to the piece that you've selected to share with us today. Willow, would you like to give us an introduction to the piece that you've chosen to share?
We've been doing Midsummer Night's Dream, as you could know, for a long, long time. It's kind of like a revival every year. We do it in 5 rehearsals now.
5 rehearsals?
Yes.
It's like an old song.
Well, and it's so funny. I think I've taken one summer off in my 32 years of existence here at Theatricum. Like literally, even when I was a baby, I was in the place. And if we've done Midsummer Night's Dream almost every year, done Midsummer Night's Dream almost every year of my entire life. I could probably sit here and recite the entire play to you from the beginning to the end. And I was the first fairy all throughout high school, junior high. And then when I got to college, I think it was my equity card I got playing Helena when I was 21. Mm-hmm. And I am still playing Helena. So I'm just going to do one of Helena's monologues. And I just love her so much, having grown up the redheaded child of the family. I kind of had that slight outcast thing that I put onto myself since I was a kid, like being the redhead and being made fun of all the time. I could really relate to this poor girl, Helena. So we do our own edited version because we do this for kids a lot. So for those of you sitting there with the book open, watching along as I speak, if I skip things, it's because it's part of our edited version.
We will publish the edited version on our website.
So this is Willow Gear and Helena from Midsummer Night's Dream, Act 1, Scene 1.
How happy some or other some can be. Through Athens I am thought as fair as she, but what of that? Demetrius thinks not so. He will not know what all but he do know. And as he errs, doting on Hermia's eye, so I, admiring of his qualities. Things base and vile, holding no quantity, love can transpose to form and dignity. Love looks not with the eyes, but with the mind. And therefore is winged Cupid painted blind. For ere Demetrius looked on Hermia's eye, he hailed down oaths that he was only mine. And when this hail some heat from Hermia felt, so he dissolved, and showers of oaths did melt. I will go tell him of fair Hermia's flight. Then to the wood will he tomorrow night pursue her. And for this intelligence, if I have thanks, oh, it is a dear expense. But herein mean I to enrich my pain, to have his sight thither and back again.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was terrific, Willow.
Willow, what I really enjoy about your performance is that you do honor the verse and the meter, but at the same time, I don't feel like it's in any way bound or constricted.
Well, good. Thanks.
That's what we try and do here, is to make it reach with total sense the elevated language, because very often it's easy, especially in Midsummer Night's Dream, which has the 4 beats, you know, that you can sort of get lost into the swim of that. But the reality of these characters is just so potent and overwhelming, and we want to get it to the audience.
So often I hear when other people do Shakespeare, they are just reciting something and they are listening to their voice and it sounds beautiful, but they're not connected to the reality of what they're saying. And so people listen to it and they don't know how to relate or follow the story or connect with the actor. And so I think that what we really try to do when we teach Shakespeare is, one, you know, talk about words and language and how you speak and how you use your T's and your P's and all that, you know, exterior stuff. But after you've gone through and chosen your operative words, you know, adding the musicality to it. So if you're using a bass note, how you can change the actual texture of the word to make it more interesting for the ear to hear. And so it keeps you listening, because it's so easy to just tune out in Shakespeare sometimes, because it goes over your head and then you just like let it go and don't want to listen to it anymore. And we also try to base it in so you know what you're saying and you as an actor connected to what you're saying, and putting just regular day-to-day emotion behind it, because so many times people think that it's this elevated thing and that it's not something you can relate to. And in actuality, the reason why it's existed for so long is that it calls to our humanity, unlike most other playwrights that I know of.
Well, it's harder for Americans too, because, you know, back in the old days in the times of Greece, you were taught at age 4 how to win an argument. I mean, it's rhetoric, how to speak, how to get your point across. But we don't have that in America. Our language is really kind of dumbed down. Scratch under the armpit, you know. So we're not used to it. That's why it's so exciting to give this kind of language to young people. Yes, it's elevated, but it elevates your spirit at the same time.
Absolutely. In the medium we're in, where I'm not able to see you, all I can hear is your voice and the way you were using your voice, the inflections and all the different changes in your tone brought me into the way you were thinking and the way you were feeling as you were saying the words. And I think that is so important and so missed on many levels these days.
You just met Helena.
Exactly.
Piggybacking on what you said, Jim, Willow, you observed that what you are trying to avoid is a sing-songy habitual sort of recitation or an idea about the way that the words sound. And at the same time, you fill this character with so much vivacity. This is not a Helena who's anyone's victim.
Yeah, that's a pit hole of this character. When we audition Helena's, the first place the modern girl goes is like, Hermia is a B-I-T-C-H. And, you know, that's not fair, what life is from. And it's the most unappealing character. And she really is lovely because she's so relatable. But if you put her in that pigeonhole, you don't want to listen to her talk anymore. She just is just like, oh, go away. No wonder no one likes you. it's a hard line.
It's true. But I mean, I think if you look at the speech, it follows a very classic pattern, which is, I have a problem. What am I going to do about the problem? Hey, here's what I'm going to do about the problem. So she's problem solving through this speech. She's not whining.
Totally. Totally.
And I think someone listening to you do this speech, Willow, even if they didn't understand a word of English, they would have a pretty good idea of what's going on.
Good. See, we train them right here.
One idea about Shakespeare is that whatever character you're watching, if you're sitting out there in the audience and you're observing, whether it's a king or a queen or a peddler, you relate to it somehow as containing aspects of your own self. And that's what makes you relate to these characters so strongly. You feel like you could be that person, or that person is really, really speaking to you personally.
Uh-oh.
So, Melora, I think speaking to you personally.
You feel that the character is speaking to you personally, or there's something that happens to you watching. When you watch a lot of these characters, you think, I'm like that. I feel like that sometimes. And it's a sort of a surreal experience, because you're looking at characters that are being done up on stage that were written over 400 years ago. And somehow those people way back then were going through the same consternations and feelings and griefs and happiness and passions that you are right now in 2013. And that's wild. And Shakespeare had a way of taking the characters and presenting them so that they are alive right now. And that's one of the things that Ellen Geer stresses so strongly in directing these plays, is the relationships between the people on stage, which is often overlooked in plays, because actors get very consumed with their own performance and what they are going through personally in their own self, and they don't relate to the actors around them as strongly as they need to, and that's what brings it to life more than anything, and it also helps you be less self-conscious as an actor.
We're so honored to have had Ellen Geer Melora Marshall, Willow Gear, and Ian Flanders on the program today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you. And I love you, Garrett. You take care of your family.
We miss you.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, guys.
I'm Garrett Vandermeer.
And I'm Jim Elliott.
And thanks for listening to The State of Shakespeare.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for the State of Shakespeare podcast. We invite you to visit stateofshakespeare.com for more episodes, information about each of our guests, and the Shakespeare text you heard on the program, and much more. And we welcome you to join the discussion by liking us on Facebook. That's www.stateofshakespeare.com. Thanks for listening.